Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment. Shabbat Shalom. Not once, not twice, not three times, but more times than I can count this past summer, I was struck by the thought, thank God I am not preaching this Shabbat. Summers at Park Avenue, construction notwithstanding, are a delightfully quiet time. We move services out of the sanctuary, our children go off to summer camp, the steady stream of B'nai Mitzvah take a hiatus, and the clergy, both rabbis and cantors, take some well-deserved downtime. Should you be around during the summer, you should make a habit of coming to shul. It's one of the sweetest and most hamish times to be here. A nice daven, connecting to community, and a cookie on your way home. No choir, no organ, no live streaming, and no big sermons. And because world events made this summer the train wreck that it was a relief not to have to preach on the developments of every week. We had and continue to have an immigrant crisis at the border. There were shootings in Virginia Beach, El Paso, Dayton, and last week Odessa, Texas. A climate crisis felt by all, actively playing out in the Amazon, trade wars, crises of democracy, and standoffs between nations. As Jews, things haven't been exactly quiet either. Anti-Semitism, both domestic and abroad, on the rise, a hot proxy war between Israel and Iran, a second Israeli election, and a primary season in America that's bringing out the worst in all parties on both sides of the ocean. An American president counseling an Israeli prime minister to disallow two U.S. congresswomen to enter Israel, a gut check for American Jewry, the likes of which I have not seen in my lifetime. It was an exchange made all the more testing by the presidential suggestion that any Jew who supports a Democratic Party is disloyal. The list goes on and on, one crisis snowballing into the next, and throughout it all I said to myself, thank God I'm not preaching this Shabbat. And now the summer is over. And now I've got something to say. The name of this morning's parsha is Shoftim, which means judges. And no surprise, the Torah reading begins with a commandment to Israel to appoint judges in all its territories in order to govern the people with justice. But that's only the beginning. Our parsha is about far more than just a judiciary and the principles by which it adjudicates law. While our country has three branches of government, ancient Israel was divided into four branches. First, as noted, the judiciary, which interestingly, as in the case of Samson and Deborah, also comes to include military leadership. Second, of course, the monarchy, perhaps the most prestigious of all four authorities. Israel had a form of constitutional monarchy, a powerful king subject to God's law, a copy of which sat literally at his side. Third, as a religious society based on sacrifices, ancient Israel also had a priestly authority, leaders with oversight over matters of worship and cult descending from the tribe of Levi. The fourth and final authority, the one I want to focus on today, is the office of the prophet. Navi mikirbecha yakim lecha, the Lord God will raise for you a prophet from among the people. Sometimes in the royal court, sometimes not. For Deuteronomy, the prophet was the most important authority, the channel of communication to God. Part oracle, part healer, part messenger, the prophet was endowed with a divine intimacy, able to convey God's will, and most importantly, serve a critical function vis-a-vis the other authorities. As in the case of King David and the prophet Nathan, the prophet legitimated the monarchy and denounced its moral lapses and offenses. As with the case of Isaiah, whom we read today, the prophet corrected the excesses and oversights of the priests. The prophet was the ancient system of checks and balances, watching, naming, and when necessary, checking both the abuses of Israel's leaders and the Israelites themselves when they violated the terms of the covenant. The prophet was this and so much more. In his 1962 book, The Prophets, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel begins his study by asking the question, what manner of man is the prophet? Heschel explains that the prophet is a person willing to say no to his society, condemning its habits, its assumptions, and its complacency. The prophet reminds Israel that few are guilty, but all are responsible. The prophet is a warrior for morality, a champion contrarian, willing to go against the grain, refusing to be neutral in the face of evil, even if it means, as is often the case, living a lonely, deeply unpopular life. At its essence, the prophet is the voice of dissent. And while the formal time of the prophets may have ended with the close of the Hebrew Bible, the prophetic voice continues to be an essential part of the project of Judaism. By this telling, prophecy is not located in any one person, class, or generation, but is an essential attribute, part of the DNA of the Jewish people. From the very first Jew, Abraham, who argued against God with the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah at stake, through the time of the prophets to Heschel himself, who fought on behalf of civil rights and protested the Vietnam War, it's the ability to take a moral stand, to refuse to let the abuses of an age become normalized, that is the hallmark of our faith. As Heschel himself wrote, dissent is indigenous to Judaism. Our era does not lack for crises. At home, abroad, as Americans, as Jews, some self-inflicted and some, as in the case of the devastation this week in the Bahamas, horrific acts of nature. I have my list. I am sure you have yours. But for me, the most terrifying crisis of all, the one that impacts every area of my concern, is that somewhere along the way, we have lost our prophetic voice. We have lost the will to dissent. We have turned quiescent, become morally timid, indifferent to the callings of the hour. For some, it's a matter of political expediency. For some, a matter of self-interest. For some, just plain laziness. So-and-so is good on Israel or the economy, so we give a pass and fail to express outrage when our sense of moral decency is affronted. So-and-so is good on progressive causes, and so we refrain from condemning bald anti-Semitism when we see it. We shame people who dare voice an unpopular opinion, attacking their character instead of arguing the merits of their ideas, bullying them into silence. Jews who object to the Israeli government are marked self-hating Zionists and Jews. Jews who object to the present administration are labeled disloyal and unpatriotic. The causes are manifold, but the effect is one and the same. We're forsaking the birthright of our prophetic voice. I'm reminded of a comment Martin Luther King made of his era, that, quote, history will record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. We have lost the mojo that makes Jews, Jews. And it is not, mind you, just as Jews that our self-audit proves lacking. It's as Americans. You can tell the tale of our country in a variety of ways, as God's new Israel, as a melting pot of immigrants and otherwise. But as the historian Robert Young writes, protest is one of the consummate expressions of Americanness. Even before our nation was established, religious dissent was a calling card of the English colonies. It was rebellion that led to the birth of our nation. It was a steady stream of dissenters who demanded the abolition of slavery, suffrage for women, rights for Native Americans, for Latinos, for African Americans, reproductive rights, and gay rights. Every single war back to 1812 had its dissenters. From the Puritans to protesting the Patriot Act, From the anthems of Pete Seeger to Zuccotti Park, it's the radicals, reformers, reactionaries, and revolutionaries who've made this nation the great nation that it is. And I'd be remiss if I failed to point out that dissent has many faces, some that may not reflect the liberal leanings of the Upper East Side. The Tea Party and the religious right understand themselves as countercultural dissenters in the most classical sense. And then, of course, there's a delicate question of the means we employ to give our dissent expression, be it John Brown at Harper's Ferry, Henry David Thoreau at Walden, or Martin Luther King in the Birmingham jail. The question of when and how one breaks an unjust law in order to serve a higher law is a question deserving of careful inquiry. But to stay silent, to not say anything, that's something that as Americans and as Jews that we cannot, dare not, and will not do, not anywhere, and especially not here in this synagogue. As a mentor of mine once taught me, the function of a house of worship is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. In our era, where the political and business communities seem more and more disinclined to object to the outrages of the day, it's increasingly incumbent upon the religious community, upon this religious community, to take up that prophetic mantle that is our patrimony. Yes, we enter this room for sanctuary, literally and figuratively. Yes, the first obligation of a synagogue is to bring Jews closer to Torah, to tradition, and to community, to be an incubator for Jewish identity. But as I've said many times, from this very spot, we come to synagogue not to hear about the world as it is, but as it ought to be. We come to synagogue to be reminded that the task of creation is not yet complete, and we are partners with God to help repair a deeply fractured world. We come to synagogue to be challenged, to hear the prophetic voice of our traditions, and to be inspired to find our own prophetic voice. The social contract of a synagogue is not that you agree with everything that's said from the pulpit. The social contract of the synagogue is that you leave here more learned as to what our tradition says about the issues of the day, and to model for ourselves, our children, and the world how to engage respectfully and civilly with views that differ from our own. Finally, we arrive here in order to leave here inspired to close the gap between the world as it is and the world as it ought to be, and act on that prophetic DNA within each of us. As Jews and as Americans, it is neither unpatriotic nor disloyal to voice dissent regarding our government or the government of Israel. If there is one message of the weeks leading up to the High Holidays, it's that criticism and love are not opposites, but two sides of the same coin, be it our families, our country, or the state of Israel. To voice dissent from a place of love is arguably the most Jewish, the most loyal, the most patriotic, and the most Zionist and most important thing an American Jew can do. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice, thou shalt pursue. Famously, the rabbis asked why tzedek, justice, is repeated twice. One time, after all, would have been enough. Of all the explanations, I find myself most moved at the thought that the pursuit of justice is twofold. Tzedek when it's easy, tzedek when it's hard. Tzedek when it's convenient, and tzedek, perhaps especially when it's inconvenient, when we have something to lose. Friends, summer is over. It's time that we say something. More importantly, it's time that we do something. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah.